Welcome. You're listening to Raw Health Rebel Podcast with Lisa Strabak. It's time to disrupt the current view of health and return to the raw basics that true wellness comes from within. I'm so excited to have Alex Zeck on the show for what is now Raw Health Rebel Podcast season finale. On a personal level, I have a huge amount of respect for Alex and all he has done on the health freedom movement. And his podcast kept me company during many a lockdown. Alex shares his story of how he found the meaning of true health and how his family healed both on mental and physical levels with alternative therapies labelled by conventional system as pseudoscience. Alex shares why he's motivated to speak up, why he started the rocket ship that is now the Health Freedom for Humanity movement, what people can do at an individual level, what he does to keep healthy and vibing high, and finally, his greatest wish for humanity.
Yeah, I just want to say massive, massive thank you, because honestly, you are such a huge inspiration. And I was like, you kept me company in lockdown. You might not realise, but when I was back in January, I just listened to so many of your podcasts and the Health Freedom for Humanity stuff while I was trying to keep busy decorating and doing stuff. So yeah, thank you. It's amazing. I just love what you do. And your story in particular really resonates with me. It has like lots of parallels. My daughter was vaccine injured or pharmaceutically damaged, actually. You know, it was a build up to that, and sort of the experience of getting no help with conventional medicine, and then you find quackery and it helps. And you know, it's amazing. And I know that you've got sort of similar story, and I'd be really, if you don't mind, sort of sharing your story on how you sort of found true health.
Yeah. So, oh boy. This is a long one that I'll try to summarize as best I can, as clear as and concise as I can. So, I grew up in an abusive household. My dad was, repeating patterns of generational abuse. He was someone who grew up in a very traumatized, chaotic and abusive household himself. His dad's dad was the same way, like all the way up the line in my dad's side of the family, and inflicted a lot of physical, mental, emotional, spiritual abuse on me, my mom, and then no physical abuse on my siblings, but all the other types of abuse towards my siblings as well. And as a result of what my mom experienced at the hands of my dad, a lot of infidelity, a lot of affairs happened as well, and a lot of gaslighting and manipulation, trying to get her to believe that what was happening wasn't actually happening, that she was crazy, and then she would find out. And anyway, he ended up going to rehab. And when my dad went to rehab, when I was 13, my mom went to go see a psychiatrist. And this psychiatrist basically just gave her a 15-minute survey to fill out. And based on the results of that survey, decided to prescribe her multiple benzodiazepines and SSRIs, so psychotropic medications. And, you know, at the time, like, our family assumed that doctors knew best, right? That doctors were the experts, they're the professionals, they know how best to treat these things. And there was no talk of trauma healing, no talk of dietary changes, no talk of mindfulness, no talk of anything in that realm. It was just 15-minute survey. Here's multiple psychotropic medications to treat your symptoms of depression and anxiety, and, you know, really, which were a result of the trauma that she had experienced and not healed. And when my mom was prescribed these, over the course of the next 8 years or so, it was just constant waves of up and down, up and down. And like, the down moments, they kept on getting worse. So if you could imagine it like on a graph over time, it was like up, down, up a little bit more, down, up a little bit more, down, and like continually spiraling down and getting worse and worse. And it was so crazy because anytime that she was good or showing any resemblance of her previous self, we thought, okay, the drugs are working well. Anytime that she was bad, and when I say bad, I mean hallucinating, not leaving her room for 2.5 weeks, getting like 2 hours of sleep at night, like sitting in the bathroom, just staring in the mirror, picking her face, thinking that I was her dad and that she was her 13-year-old self again, hallucinating so badly. And you know, anytime she was down, we thought that the drugs were just not working. She needs to go back to see the psychiatrist again to make sure that she finds the drugs that that help her, right? And just progressively worse and worse and worse, especially when I was at the university that I was at, I almost considered leaving because my mom had already had multiple suicide attempts because she would get so bad sometimes she'd have to be put in a psych hospital, and had multiple suicide attempts in psych hospital. And I remember in 2016, I had already written off, and my siblings had already written off any chance that we were going to have a relationship with my mom. We, you know, had this up and down, like when she was up, we're like, oh my God, maybe this is it. She's going to be normal again. 2 days later, down again, hallucinating, like sitting in her room for 2 weeks. So we finally, after a number of these cycles, got to a point where we're like, okay, there's no way we're going to be able to have a relationship with her. We need to just accept that this is who she's going to be for the rest of her life. She's probably going to have to be permanently institutionalized. We're actually looking at long-term facilities for her, and or that we would lose her to suicide. And in 2016, she went to go see, I think, a therapist. She kept on trying. Anytime she had good moments, she would really like come to an understanding, like, okay, I need to go try something else. Try this. Try wheatgrass. Try this. And this therapist told her about a new book that had come out a month prior to her seeing this therapist, called A Mind of Your Own. And that was written by Dr. Kelly Brogan. And this therapist was like, Allie, I don't know if you've ever heard of her, but this book is amazing. I recommend you try to go see her. And as a sort of last resort type of thing, my mom was like, okay, I'm going to go see Dr. Kelly Brogan. And Dr. Kelly Brogan essentially told my mom, Allie, you are not bipolar. You are not chronically depressed. You are not any of these labels. You have trauma that you need to heal. The psychotropic medications that you're on, I previously prescribed these and I do not do that anymore because they are not good for you. They are not conducive to health or to healing or to making you well. You need to change the way that you eat, change the way that you approach food. You need to start doing coffee enemas, which was a huge shock to me at the time. Like, what? Now I do them. So, you need to be more mindful. You need to heal your trauma and you will be well. And gave my mom those tools to heal herself. And then in a matter of 4 to 6 months, my mom was completely reversing all the symptoms that she had experienced while under the care of these experts, these professionals, these psychiatrists. And now she has adopted the approach of these, quote, pseudoscientific quacks. I mean, at the time, had you looked up Dr. Kelly Brogan, you would find that she is described as a pseudoscientific quack who spreads misinformation, is a, quote, germ theory denier. And today she's on the disinformation dozen. So it's even worse. But the point is, she literally, Kelly wouldn't say it this way. She literally saved my mom's life. She saved my mom's life by empowering my mom and giving her the tools that she needs to actually be well. And this was a huge shock to our entire family. And obviously all the trauma started to resurface as well. So she had to start actually healing that, actually dealing with those emotions for the first time instead of just suppressing them, taking pills for them. And after we saw what happened with my mom, my wife, who had previously been diagnosed with lupus and rheumatoid arthritis in 2007, now fast forward 2016, we had just gotten married to see what happened with my mom, completely healing. My wife was always chronically inflamed, seeing multiple rheumatologists who said, you're just going to have to live like this and just manage it the best you can with we're going to try a bunch of different drugs, different immunosuppressant drugs. Oddly enough, hydroxychloroquine was one of them. And that's the only way you're going to be able to deal with this. There's really nothing else you can do. Multiple rheumatologists saying the exact same thing. After seeing what happened with my mom, we decided, okay, work for her on the sort of mental side of things. Why couldn't it work for you on the physical side of things? Let's just try this and see how it goes. So we adopted the same approach for my wife. And in a matter of like 2 to 4 months, she had tapered off all of her medications for lupus and rheumatoid arthritis and was completely fine. And we actually had blood work to prove that. We went to go get her SED rates tested, which is like your inflammation levels in your blood. And they were normal for the first time in 9 years. And even when she was on these drugs that were supposed to be, quote, helping her, that led to other symptoms, which led to other drugs, which led to other symptoms, led to other drugs. She was on, ended up being on psych drugs because of the symptoms that developed because of the other drugs that she was on, which is just absurd. But for the first time in years, she was feeling well naturally and had blood work to prove it. And when we saw the rheumatologist and she was like, I don't really need my medication anymore. He just was kind of like, oh, okay. He didn't ask. He didn't like, wait, what? You don't need these anymore? What happened? Like, how did you do this? It was just like, oh, okay. Like, that's fine. Check a box. Like, okay, thank you. Hope you feel well. And then like leave. And so like that, those two situations, and then like that experience with the rheumatologist and like me having this cognitive dissonance, like these people are experts. These people are paraded around as the knowledge-based experts on this, this quote, pseudoscientific quack who spreads quote misinformation is the one who helped my mom and my wife heal for the first time ever. One was about to die. The other was perpetually ill, chronically inflamed. And now they're completely healing. Why is this happening? So I obsessively researched for the next 5 years now. I've not stopped ever since. So I consider myself to be extremely knowledgeable on what's going on with COVID, oddly enough, because I had already done the work and seen with my own two eyes and my own experiences and observations, what happens when you blindly accept what experts say, what happens when you take on the approach of quote, pseudoscientific quacks, why the system would design itself to label those people who adopt those methods that are more natural in their approach, or label the people who are giving that information out, like Dr. Kelly Brogan, as dangerous, as misleading, because they are a threat to the system. That is simply the only reason. And I've seen it over and over again. And the craziest part is prior to COVID, as my mom began speaking out and really establishing herself on social media, my wife and I were just people who posted pictures on Instagram of our kids and stuff like that prior to COVID. But as my mom began speaking out, she began coming across hundreds of other people with similar stories with either psychotropic medications or vaccines or what have you, just being gaslighted and manipulated and denied and, you know, labeled as crazy by the system that they left and they've now healed. And that was really eye-opening as well. Cause I'm like, wow, there are so many other people with stories just like this and in, you know, different areas regarding allopathic medicine and the pharmaceutical, approach that they take. And they're being labeled as crazy. They're being dismissed. And it's just like, it adds fuel to the fire. And you really come to an understanding of why things are operating in this way. And it's so unbelievably obvious. All that it requires is for people to break through that cognitive dissonance, to not blindly accept what they are told, not blindly accept anything that I'm saying, and to explore for themselves. And what you will find will shock you and probably make you very angry. But after some time, you will come to understand why, and you will come to understand that this approach actually provides real mechanisms for healing.
What a powerful story. I mean, it is amazing. I do wonder sometimes, do people have to reach sort of the precipice and, you know, something really bad to happen personally for them to wake up? Because once you do start exploring this, you know, health, alternative health, that it works, and realizing, it kind of blows your mind a bit, because you start obviously questioning not just health, but other systems as well, I guess. And I suppose a lot of people aren't ready for that. I mean, do you think that people do have to reach rock bottom to get to that point of opening their mind?
Yeah, they have to be. I mean, there's so much nuance to this answer, but in general, yes, I think people have to have experienced something in their life, and it doesn't even have to deal with health necessarily, but having to question an authority figure that you've looked up to, that you believe has your best interest in mind, and then seeing that authority figure completely, can I cuss on here?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay. For lack of a better term, fuck you over. I just want to make sure. So, I mean, that happened to me multiple times in my life, because I saw what happened with my dad when I was younger, who made me believe that I was a worthless piece of shit, beat the shit out of me when I was younger, and, you know, made me think that I was never going to amount to anything unless I was this very perfect box that he had in mind for who I was going to be. And then, you know, seeing my mom be gaslighted by him over and over again regarding the affairs that he had, seeing my mom be gaslighted by the medical system, then my wife be gaslighted by the medical system and manipulated and denied. And then we had an experience from after my mom began to heal, where my dad was starting to repeat those same patterns he had been repeating prior to rehab again. At this time, my parents were still together. And the more time went on, the more I was noticing behaviors in him that were similar to what was happening previously. And I would approach him and be like, hey, something's not right. And he was like, no, 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 you don't, like, how the fuck, how dare you, blah, 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 blah. And then come to find out he is doing the same things again. He was making us believe that my mom was the crazy one, that she just needed to heal her trauma, which was true. But he was using that as a scapegoat to say, no, 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 you're getting it all wrong. She's the one that's wrong. And then behind the scenes, he was doing really, really fucked up stuff, but creating this perception amongst like his businesses that he owned. And like a lot of my friends worked at the business, a lot of our family friends, creating this perception that he was the righteous one and that my mom is just crazy. And then come to find out after some time, lots of things transpired. We find out that he was completely lying and manipulating. And this is all prior to COVID. So again, like I've had this happen over and over again in my life. I've seen how people can create this facade and this perception that they are righteous, that they are doing something that is actually virtuous and good, but behind the scenes be absolutely doing the most fucked up things to people, causing massive harm to people. But on the surface, to everyone who is not keen to those type of things and doesn't have eyes to see it, it's like, how, like, what are you talking about? He's a great dude. And it's not that my dad's not a great dude. He's just a person who's very traumatized, who's never healed his trauma and doesn't know who he is. But the point is, it's like that same behavior is happening in the collective right now. They're creating this perception that, you know, what they're doing, the actions that they're taking, the steps they're doing, and even like the like health officials on the state and local, or like, I don't know how you guys have it in the UK, but like the, even the ones who are at lower echelons, they probably genuinely believe that they are doing what is best. I really do think that they think that they're not all quote in on it. They just think that they're doing what's best because someone above them is telling them that's what's best. They've never had to question authority. They've never come to an understanding of what health actually looks like either. So they just assume that they're doing best. And then when they hear from their authority figures who they blindly accept what they're saying, that we are the crazy ones, that we are the ones causing massive amounts of harm. The unvaccinated are the ones, or the unvaccinated, the people who refuse to wear a mask are the ones who are perpetuating this pandemic. They're going to believe that because they've never had an experience that has forced them to question. And this is why I'm so big on approaching people with love and compassion. Do I get pissed off? Fuck yeah. I get really mad sometimes. But in general, I always make a point to approach people with love and compassion and acceptance and be welcoming of opinions that are diametrically opposed to mine. If someone is cussing me out and like is not approachable, okay, then I'm going to block them and I'm not going to speak to them. But if they have genuine questions and they want to learn, or I can at least sense that they're a little bit open, all I do is I don't feed them data and studies. I post that stuff because it adds credibility to what I say. But when I talk to them individually, I ask them to turn to their own observations and their own experience regarding what is going on. Do you have actual observed, have your perceptions and your experiences shown you that people who oppose vaccines, people that oppose masks are actually dangerous? Or have you been conditioned to believe that? And if the answer is diametrically opposed to mine, that they've actually observed that in some ways, because there are some people out there who are some shit people who are on quote our side, that are creating a really bad negative perception. But, and if that's what their experience is, then they need to go with their experience, even if it's diametrically opposed to mine. Just don't impose your will upon mine. But I always turn people back to their own observations, experiences, and intuition. Tell them to get to the root, stop blindly accepting what anyone says, take on that information, but don't blindly accept it, and explore for themselves and come to their own conclusions. And more often than not, when you approach people that way, they are actually able to see that at the least something that they are being told by the authority figures above them does not match up with their own observations, lived experiences, and intuition at the least. And that is how you reel them into this understanding.
Yeah, there's I love that you can do that because it's not always easy, and I think it's amazing. I definitely think that is the way to go about it. I have to say, you know, I was at the last London protest, and I didn't stay for all of it. I left after the first two. This one wasn't a march throughout London; it was a static one in Trafalgar Square, and they had speakers. And I had to leave after the first speech because, actually, the second one, because it wasn't full of love and compassion. And I thought, anyone passing by on the street that's hearing this is perhaps on the fence, is going to sort of think that, you know, the movement or the truth movement or the what true health is about isn't about love and compassion, you know. And yes, I thought, you have to be empathetic. You know, I used to, you know, my daughter had a vaccine injury. I used to be completely in the conventional medicine system. So, but it's not always.
And had you not had that experience, you probably, like, you don't know if you'd be able to see what's going on right now at all. That's what I always say. Like, had I not had the experiences that I had in my life and, you know, had more of the less traumatic experiences that some of my friends have had who, like, don't see what's going on, I don't know that I would be able to see what's going on either. Like, it really does require experience. And we're seeing that same thing with people who are receiving the shot, blindly accepting what the authority tells them, and then are injured. I've talked with so many of them. We're going to be interviewing a lot for the Health Freedom for Humanity podcast because those stories need to get out. But the point is, every single one of them has stated, like, I had no idea. I had no clue. I always thought that anti-vaxxers or, you know, people who question anything that's going on were crazy, until it happened to me. And then when it happened to me, or happened to someone that I love, or happened to my dad, you know, whoever else, then it really, like, shocked me. Like, I went into a cognitive dissonance, and that's the exact same that I was experiencing 5 years ago. That's exact same thing that you experienced with your daughter's vaccine injury. And that's, like, sometimes that's what it requires. And, you know, this is, like, a spiritual, grounded in a very spiritual perception of mine, that these catalysts, so to speak, that we experience in these life, or in this life, are opportunities for us to really awaken to what's going on if we use them correctly. They could be these catalysts, these traumatic events, if we do not integrate them effectively and learn from them, can actually make us dive deeper into darkness. That's how people get very jaded and get into those mindsets of, oh, fuck the system. And, like, again, there's nuance to that. There's times where I'm like, yeah, fuck the system. But if we're not approaching those who are still stuck in the system with love and compassion, then we're missing the point entirely.
Completely. Yeah, I know. I love that. I love that sentiment, definitely. And what why did you start speaking out? Because, you know, lots of people have had injuries or some experiences and they still struggle to find their voice. You know, what motivated you?
You know, so from 2017 through 2016 is when we started on the health journey. And for me, that started with just focusing on diet and then a little bit of mindfulness techniques and stuff, which were really helpful, but I was already like a seemingly healthy dude. But I hadn't healed any of my trauma yet. So I didn't know who I was. So I was always self-identifying in the things that I was doing, right? And at the time I had just graduated from one of the top public universities in the United States, the United States Military Academy at West Point. I had just become an Army officer. I was in the U.S. Army world-class athlete program, training as an Olympic athlete. So that was my identity. And that was, like, who I was. Like, I created this, you know, perception that that's who I am. That's what I self-identify with, because I hadn't done any trauma healing. And I was always searching and reaching for things to as my identity, rather than understanding who I am, because I felt like I was an unworthy piece of shit unless I was these things, right? That's what I was made to believe when I was younger. And I was never fully authentic about who I was, my perceptions on life or anything like that, until I really started doing the childhood trauma healing in 2017, 2018, started meditating consistently, doing emotional freedom technique, journaling, getting into a meditative state and actually reparenting myself, being that parent that I needed at that time. And it was a lot of really hard work. It's what we call the shadow work, right? Making amends for things that I had done wrong to other people. And once I did that, and got to the root of who I am, which was, like, at first it was like, I remember sitting in this room that's, like, right down the hall, like, bawling my eyes out. Like, I don't know who the fuck I am. Like, I have no idea who I am. And it was, this thing hit me. And it's like, you are who you want to be. And I was like, wow, I get to, like, really be authentically who I want to be now. Like, for the first time ever. Cause I was like, wow, I don't know who the fuck I am anymore. who am I? And I was like, I get to be authentic. And this was prior to COVID. So once I had done all that trauma healing, really established like a meditative practice, became extremely mindful. And it's always a continual practice and I'm continually healing more and more trauma. I got to a point where I was like, I don't give a fuck what anybody thinks of me. I really do not care. As long as I'm approaching things from a position of love and compassion, I don't care. It does not matter. So COVID hit. And it's funny because prior to COVID, when we had done all this trauma healing, after the situation happened with my dad, which was a huge shock because like, it was like, we had started the healing process with Kelly Brogan. Then another huge things happened with my family. And it's like another emotional shock, a lot of which like propelled me into my trauma healing, propelled my mom into more trauma healing, like the whole family. We were all sitting at my mom's house and my mom said, I feel like something big is going to happen next year. And my sister, myself, my brother, and my wife were all just like, shut up. Like, no, like, no, there's not. She's like, no, seriously, I really feel like something that's going to be like life changing is going to happen next year. And at the same time, we were like, okay, we have an understanding of natural health. We have an understanding of mindfulness. We've dealt with narcissistic abuse. How can we help people? COVID hits. My mom had already been establishing her platform based on like psychotropic medication awareness and stuff. And once that hit, we had narcissistic abuse being inflicted upon the entire population. We had people who had a perception of natural health. They were being labeled as crazy, you know, misleading, blah, 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 blah. And we had the pharmaceutical industry trying to literally take over the entire world behind the scenes in many ways. And all the nefarious actors at the World Health or World Economic Forum, World Health Organization. And having dealt with that on the microcosm and seeing it in the collective now, at first I was like biting my tongue, just observing like, fuck, this is crazy. Like, I cannot believe what's going on. I remember in February of 2020, my wife and I looked at each other when we did think that there was something that was going to kill everyone. We were like, regardless of what happens, this will no doubt be used for mandatory vaccinations for all people. No question. And so many people, yeah, you're nodding your head. So many people.
Please, it's the first thing I said. Well, you know, yeah, exactly.
This is it. We saw it coming. Like anyone who had been paying attention saw like there's something that they're going to try to, you know, this is it. So my mom was right too. She was like, something big is happening next year. I was like, damn, mom. But it got to a point where like, you know, I was still in the army at the time. I was a captain in the army and I was like, you know, me speaking as an army officer could be seen as very controversial. But I got to a point where I felt so convicted and I could no longer bite my tongue. And I knew I had perceptions on things. My mom was already growing a social media presence and people were looking to her for information and clarity on this. And I was giving her a lot of the information to say, and she was finally just like, Alec, you need to speak. And I was like, all right, fuck it. I'm going to speak. And then I started speaking. And then what I said started resonating with a lot of people. And I've sort of never turned back. And I've really just done a lot of work to get over caring what other people think. As long as I'm approaching things from a position of love and compassion, and I'm accepting of views that are diametrically opposed to mine, so long as they're not trying to impose their will upon me and people who think the way that I do.
You were perfectly prepped, weren't you? The universe had great plans for you and your family. It's like you couldn't have been primed better in some ways for this. Yeah.
Yeah. To experience this exact same situation on the individual level in my own life and then also do the work to heal it. I can't not speak now. Like I have to share my perceptions with the world. And again, it's really turned to, well, me sharing my authentic perceptions, but also really giving people the space and the courage to share their own authentic perceptions and to not blindly trust what anyone else says.
Yeah, and it's amazing what you do and really appreciate it. So thank you. You know, I know people really respect what you do. So like with the Health Freedom for Humanity, how did that come about? You know, obviously you started speaking up and now that's taken off.
Yeah, so in September of last year, I sort of had this idea that like I don't see many organizations that are banding together multiple, I hate using this word, but influencers, so to speak. And I felt that there was a need to show that, like, hey, we are all united outside of race, outside of religion, outside of socioeconomic background, political affiliation. Strictly, we are united on the fact that each of us has the right to choose what is best for our own health without coercion or force. That's it. And I approached a few people and I was like, hey, I think we should form an organization behind this and like look to bring in people who are part of other organizations and stop this like siloing where it's like, hey, this is my organization. Okay, this is my organization. Like, we need to all unite and unite from different walks of life. And I started like planning that with a few people, and then we decided to launch it in January, and we had no intention originally of developing chapters or anything like that. It was just more so to create an online presence and show like, hey, we have people from all walks of life who agree that that no person should be forced into anything that they don't want with regards to their health. And then it exploded pretty quickly, and we decided, you know, to have other people be involved. It was necessary to start state and local and chapters in different countries. So we have chapters popping up all over right now. We have chapters in 12 different states in the United States. We have one starting in the UK. We have one starting in Canada. We have one that already started in Australia. And we'll probably have chapters all over the world. And it's cool because, like, within our organization, we have people who are also part of Freedom Keepers United, which is another organization. We have people who are part of Children's Health Defense, which is another organization. And it's like, there's no freaking ego here. We're literally just trying to unite people from all walks of life and show that health freedom is a fundamental and inalienable right for every single person. And it's cool because, like, Allison Sorrell, who's the CEO of Freedom Keepers, her and I talk all the time on ways that we can help collaborate and just propel this movement forward. That's all that matters. This like siloing of like, oh, this is my organization, nobody can take it from me, is so stupid and it's not helpful. So we're just doing whatever we can to grow this and really turn the idea of health freedom for humanity into a movement rather than a centralized organization. It's a movement that every human being can get behind.
I love that. And as you know, I completely agree. In the UK, I'm so glad it's come to UK because there's so many sort of disjointed groups, you know, even the protests, you know, there'll be one group trying to organize it on one day and another group on another day, and it's like just everyone just needs to come together because it's all the same purpose and mission.
Yes.
And that there can be too many different movements. I think there needs to be one united front, definitely with health freedom at its core. What do you think people can do at an individual level, you know, because I think that's the hard thing sometimes.
Yeah, well, I'd say the first thing is you have to be authentic. And what I mean by that is you need to speak your mind and your perceptions always from a position of love and compassion. The other thing that's really important too is to not blindly believe what anyone says, including me, and always understand your own inner faculties and inner workings first. And then also to do whatever you can right now to decentralize yourself, in my opinion. And again, this is going to be for you to determine if it's best for you. Decentralize yourself from any of these systems that are trying to force you to adopt their system and adopt their methods that they want in order to participate in the system. And so for me, just like we were talking about before, I have a garage gym set up. I don't go to a gym. The gyms here are where I'm located aren't like requiring anything right now, but I don't know if they will. I go to the gym here. And then I also am doing like setting up things to grow my own food here. My wife is working with a lot of other parents to do like a sort of co-op homeschooling thing where they have a school outside of the system. It's things like that where you're creating new and better systems that make the old system obsolete. I think it is important to still continue to expose the system for what it is, right? But I think at this point, trying to petition the system to change, especially at the like upper echelons, that's not going to happen. They have too much power, too much influence, too much money. The only way to change the system is by forcing it to change via creating new and better systems that make that system obsolete. I forget where that quote came from, but someone else said that. It's not me. But it's important to create your own systems outside of the system that are so attractive, so welcoming, so loving, so based in like nature and what's best for human beings outside of any political, religious, any of that shit, just what's best for human beings to exist and coexist in a symbiotic fashion with the environment, with each other. And once you create those systems, the old system is so unattractive to people that they could not participate in that system. So like, instead of focusing your energy on like, please mommy, daddy, save me, change, please change. They're not going to change. You go be the change. And then all the other people who are still under that umbrella will see like, oh my God, this is so much better. And they'll come over to your side.
Yeah, completely. I have been thinking that for a while. It's like, if people haven't, you know, I think there's been a lot of time spent trying to wake people up or, you know, sort of share truth. And you're right, we need to do that. But actually, time is marching on and we need to focus on building the new. So, yeah, I am completely on the same wavelength. We're selling our house, looking to buy land, home educating our kids. You know, I don't want to be, you know, whatever they try and impose, I'm like, I need to be at a point where it doesn't matter because, you know, I've connected with like-minded people and I'm unaffected by whatever, you know, the government may try to do.
And, you know, this also like brings up a really good point that it may require temporary sacrifices. Like, am I going to travel around the world right now? No. Like, would I like to? Yeah. Like, oh, I really want to travel. I really want to do this. I really want to do that. Okay. For me, standing up for what is right is much more important than all of these things that I could be doing. And eventually those things will come back if we continue to stand up for what is right authentically, say no to what they're trying to impose upon us, be loving, be compassionate about it. Don't be belligerent. Don't be hostile and go set up your own systems outside the systems. Politely say no. Go do your own thing. And the more you continue to go do your own thing and make those temporary sacrifices to not travel, maybe not go eat at that restaurant that is imposing this, maybe, you know, other things, whatever it is for the individual, those things will eventually come back. Because the more we continue to say no and just continue to do our own thing, the system will lose out on so many people that it will literally be forced to change. It will be forced to change on its own.
Yeah, definitely. I am sad about the fact I can't come to your in-person event in Kansas City because I would have loved to have come to that. But yeah, we have to make these sacrifices, not being able to travel or whatever for the time being. Yeah. But I think it's temporary too, you know, so hold tight for maybe a year or two or whatever, even if it's a few years. Yeah. So what, one thing I wanted to ask, like on a day-to-day level, you know, what do you've got a really high vibe, you know, what do you do to keep positive and in your daily practice?
Oh, I wouldn't say that I'm very positive all the time. I mean, there's still just so much darkness happening in the world that I don't want to say get overwhelmed by it, but I do have to integrate that a lot and do a lot of healing behind what's going on with that, or like triggers that still come up for me. And like, that's what happens in this reality. It's this dance, this yin and yang, this light and dark and the balance of the two. But in general, what helps me maintain my centeredness rather than high positivity, right, is meditating, is working out, is asking the creator, how can I be of service to other people today? And starting my day off that way. And then eating as clean as I possibly can. I've been doing this thing lately where I don't even eat meals. I just eat just enough to like what I feel provides sustenance for me, really trying to focus on not overeating and over consuming. But it really is like for me, meditation, breath work, spending a lot of time with my son and my daughter and my wife, and then being of service to people in the best way that I can. And the more that I'm centered, the more those ways that I can help people naturally come about. And I'm not trying to force anything. I'm not trying to force anyone to see, force anything on anyone whatsoever, force anything in this reality. Things just naturally flow the more that I'm in a centered space. And for me, that like it is vitally important to work out, meditate, spend time with those that I love, eat extremely clean, focus on my breath, and not let the darkness that's happening in the world overcome me. Cause it's the understanding that the fundamental aspect of this reality is that we are here to experience, and this is a temporary finite experience in a much larger, an infinite experience that we're a part of, and that we do not die. We are infinite and eternal, and we're here just to experience and grow our own soul.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. And do you, I mean, in terms of, if you don't mind actually asking just about your wife's healing, you obviously used a lot, it's because it's physical, you know, you used a lot of alternative medicines, presumably. What did you do there? And people will kill me if I don't ask, because as a homeopath, did you use homeopathy at all? I often get
no,
asked.
No, we didn't. I love homeopathy, but we did not. And I know a lot of people who use homeopathy, and I love the entire concept behind homeopathy, but like the... Honestly, what we did to initially heal her was strictly focus on her diet and being more mindful. So for her, that was, we adopted the Whole 30 diet, which is just like a more strict version of paleo, essentially. And we were very mindful about what we ate. And then we also did a little bit of like breath work meditation. But then once that event happened in 2017, 2018, that propelled us to go inward even more. And we really started focusing on healing our trauma. In many ways. And again, that was emotional freedom technique, journaling, EMDR, what else? Meditation, reparenting our inner child. So that those are the things that really helped us heal on the, I guess, mental and spiritual side of things. And the physical side, we really just focused on eating extremely clean and then exercising.
And that's the thing, there's so many different modalities, aren't there, that you can find what's right for you, and they often all have the same similar outcome. So when you say about that your inner child and the release that you had, you know, of old emotions, I know when I did a lot of work on myself, for me, I used homeopathy, I saw a homeopath, you know, and I'd take remedy and there'd be a release. You know, it can quite often look like you're taking a pill to fix something, but it's you doing the work, you know, the yeah. pill would just act as a catalyst, and the emotions that would come out. And I do remember early on in my journey, actually it was around 2017 as well, thinking, this is so awful, like how I felt. I thought, I don't even know if I want to continue, because it's not easy healing at a really deep level. So I think it can,
especially on the emotional spiritual side of things, like that is the hardest part, in my opinion.
Completely. I mean, it's ultimately worth it. Anyone listening that might be thinking, oh, you're putting me off, but it is definitely worth it. But it's not easy. And I think that's the thing, isn't it, with under the allopathic model, we are taught we just take a pill and everything goes away. You know, it is true healing is quite hard, I think, at times.
But and it requires consistency. Mm-hmm. It requires like you actually doing the work yourself. And this is a bigger aspect of what's at play right now. It's creating this perception that we are inherently weak, that there's nothing that we can do individually to maintain our health, that we are, you know, at odds with our environment, that our environment naturally wants to harm us. But the reality is many of those harms that exist in our environment are coping mechanisms that were developed because we are under the impression that we are weak, that we are, you know, we need this external pharmaceutical savior. But the reality is we can heal ourselves in so many ways just by getting back to the fundamental natural things that human beings are supposed to be doing and just throwing all of those coping mechanisms aside. That's it. And it does require consistent everyday work, and it requires you to actually take steps rather than just like, oh, I'm helpless. Just give me a pill, give me a shot, give me this surgery, give me this treatment. No, it requires you to do the work consistently every single day to be healthy. For the most part, your health is entirely in your hands, but regardless, it is your responsibility. There are things that are happening in the environment. There are traumas that happen to you that are ultimately out of your control. Like, I can't control whether millimeter waves and 5G are put up right outside my house in many ways, but I can control my own inner faculties. And I am ultimately, regardless, responsible and in charge of my own health.
Yeah. And that's the message that, you know, I definitely want to get across, even to the point where I sort of temporarily stopped practicing homeopathy because I was getting patients come through expecting a pill. And no matter how much I was saying, it's just stimulating self-healing, you know, it still didn't quite go in. And yeah, completely. We definitely.
Well, you see that a lot though, too, where people who have been harmed by the allopathic system, where they are blindly outsourcing to these people, blindly trusting what they say, take that exact same consciousness when they're harmed by that system and then blindly outsource to alternative doctors or, you know, holistic doctors in many ways and say, hey, I want you to save me. And it's like, it's so cool seeing so many alternative and holistic practitioners now, like you, taking that approach of like, no, that's not how this works. I give you the tools, I give you the resources, but you have to heal yourself. That's why I love what Dr. Tommy John says all the time. He says, you heal you. And so many people misinterpret what he says. They're like, what do you mean I heal myself? I just like sit around and like, no, that's not what we're saying. We're saying like, we give you the tools, we give you the resources, but you have to actually take the steps yourself on a day-to-day basis to heal yourself. You heal you. That's it.
Yeah, I love Tommy John. He's been on my podcast twice. And everything he says just resonates on such a deep level. It is so true what he says. But I guess, you know, it's good when people take the first step from conventional medicine, Western medicine, to looking at alternative. But it's that mindset. It's so deep ingrained, isn't it, that you will just have something to make you better. And it is like the whole COVID situation is lunacy, isn't it? That basically, you know, there's been nothing once, I don't know, in the States, nothing about what we can do to empower our own health.
You know, it's crazy. I always like these statistics stick in the back of my head. So what we have on hand, if you trust the CDC's data at face value, which I don't whatsoever, but if you are to play in that system, it's very easy to use their own data against them. So what we have is 95% of COVID deaths had an average of 4 comorbidities, right? Meaning that there's 4 other causes listed for their death. And most of those are lifestyle or nutrition related: hypertension, diabetes, heart disease, obesity. Some of the largest cofactors for death with people who are labeled as COVID deaths. No mention by any expert or health official or anyone in the media, anyone in the government, of anything to do with metabolic health to actually make you healthy, when we have data that clearly shows poor metabolic health, people who are not actually caring for themselves on a day-to-day basis are the ones who are struggling with whatever is happening. Then we have another one. 78% of COVID hospitalizations were in the overweight or obese. This is the CDC's own data. And what we have in response to that is $10 billion towards vaccine infrastructure for low-income communities and to combat vaccine hesitancy. $10 billion for that. And those same low-income communities that you're creating infrastructure for have no access to health foods. They can take steps if they really, really want it to find things to keep them healthy. And at the least, even if you're getting GMO vegetables, it's better than eating processed foods on a day-to-day basis. But the point is, the government is allotting $10 billion towards this and nothing to do with nutrition, nothing to do with exercise, nothing to do with mindfulness, nothing to do with anything to do with actually keeping people healthy. And I've heard the excuse over and over again, well, we're dealing with a pandemic, so this is a different circumstance. Maybe after the pandemic is over, blah, 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 blah. No, it's been 18 months. It's been 18 months and there has not been one mention of any of those things when we have data that clearly shows that poor metabolic health and poor internal health is what's causing people to be sick. No mention of anything to empower people to actually take steps to keep them healthy.
There's no money to be made there, is there?
No.
And, you know, I think... Well, we know it's not just about health, is it? And I think, yeah, when you know sort of a deeper level what it is all about, you know, it's obvious. But, you know, and the irony, I guess, if they do roll out the vaccine passport, which is imminent, you know, in the UK, the government's gone off on their summer holidays, but I think it's coming in September, that we won't be allowed a health passport, you know, when we're probably one of the most healthiest, you know, out of the population. It is crazy. What's it like where you are in your state at the moment?
You know, it's crazy because the U.S. is just so big, right? That it's different in state to state, right? So
yeah,
like 4 months ago, I was living in Oklahoma and my sister was living in New York. And when we both came home to visit my mom in Kansas City in Kansas, my wife and I were talking about how, wow, Kansas is so much more restrictive than Oklahoma. Oklahoma, like even in the city, nobody really cares. Like in the, and this is the, at the quote height of the pandemic, you could walk into any place without any mask. There'd be signs on the door that says, please wear a mask. But like most people who are wearing them have them below their nose. Like some people aren't wearing them at all. Nobody cared and they're not any issues whatsoever. Kansas City, much more restrictive. But my sister coming from New York to Kansas City commented on how, oh my God, it's so free here, which was like so crazy for me to hear. Cause I'm like, it's so restrictive here. How bad is it in New York? So where we are in Kansas City, it just really depends on where you go. So I tend to just stay in like my same group of people who get it. So I like get what's going on. So I am not really subject to what's going on in the city. But for the most part, when you do go to the city or go to grocery stores or shops or anything like that, even if they have like wear a mask upon entering, like you don't have to.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, the US is vast. I always think of it as like compared to us, it's like 50 little countries, isn't it? So,
yeah.
And yeah, that's, I mean, it's weird here in the UK because we've had so many lockdowns and it was so horrific. Well, you know, only a few weeks ago. And now it's bizarre. It's like almost, not that I like the word normal, almost back to normal, but it's only, you know, no, it's only, I think it's only temporary. Everyone else is like carrying on like it's all over. And you just think, I think I know what's coming come October or autumn. But yeah, we'll wait and see. But it is very, very bizarre over here right now. Like there's no masks or anything like that.
It's crazy. Like New Zealand, for example, they just went back into lockdown because of one COVID case.
So I saw that and I was like, just what the, it's so different in every country. It seems to be going in waves. I say it's so different, it just seems to be waving across. You know, right now in France it's horrendous, and yet actually last year when it was awful, you know, here it was better in France. So I think it just seems to be that they sort of loosen the squeeze temporarily so that the frog doesn't realize it's being boiled and then ramp it back.
Exactly.
Up.
This is what I explained with regards to what's happening in even in Kansas City right now. So most places have masks recommended on their doors, and it's like, okay, it's getting people, because there was no mask anything for a good 2-3 months. Now it's back to, okay, masks recommended upon entering. So it's like conditioning people just a little bit to accept, okay, there are people who are wearing masks as are recommended. Then it'll be mask required, conditioning people a little bit more to accept that again. Cause like after a 3 month period of no masks, if they just came out and said masks required upon entering, people would freak out. Even those who have complied previously would probably freak out like, no, I'm not doing this again. But because just little by little, they're reintroducing these things that they had before, people just, it's just like the frog in the boiling water analogy, the exact same thing. It's just the little by little slow drip, introduce this restrictive measure, introduce this restrictive measure, keep on going. And then before we know it, we're in a full blown tyrannical technocratic state. If we continue to comply, and that's where it's so important to stand authentically for the right to choose for other people, stand authentically for your own individual right. Don't do so in a belligerent way. Do not be hostile, be peaceful and loving, but stand for your right to choose.
Yeah, completely. So, and like that positive note, and I'm conscious of time, so I want to ask you like a final question, if that's okay. Hopefully, and on a positive note, if you could have one wish for humanity right now, what would you wish for?
I could have one wish for humanity. It would be for everyone to break through the conditioning that we are subject to, the traumas we've experienced, the information impressed upon us, the negative experiences that we've had, that all these layers of that we add on top of ourselves, that we think make up who we are and make up what this reality is. If we could take each of those layers and look at it and ask, is this for me? Is this coming from the authentic person that I am? And if not, throw it away. If it is, put it back on. If we could do that with all of these layers, all of these things that we have experienced in this life, all of the information pressed upon us, all the trauma, all of it, all the fear mongering, and actually look at it for what it is and understand that it's not coming from us and the authentic being that we are. And then for people to stop blindly accepting what others say, that would be my wish for humanity, for each individual to actually do the work to understand who and what they actually are and what the purpose of this reality is. And I think the world would be a much, much better place.
Yeah, I love it. There's hope. Let's hope that that does happen. I think things are, this is, you know, this whole situation is giving people the chance to change and wake up, isn't it? So let's hope that good does come out. And just for people wanting to sort of find out more about you, what you've obviously keep being deplatformed on Instagram. So which is the best?
This is always funny to say this on podcasts, because like I've had multiple podcasts I've been on where I'm like, oh yeah, you can find me at this. And then like a week later that account's deleted. So right now you can find me at _Al_Boogie, B-O-O-G-I-E. On Instagram. On Twitter, I've never been deleted or anything on Twitter. It's crazy. It's at @Alec_Zek. And then the main form of communication that I use is Telegram. So it's t.me/theWayForward, just like that, except for it, the forward is spelled F-W-R-D. So the way forward, F-W-R-D for forward. So that's where people can find me.
I'll put links in the show notes. And anything else before we depart that you want to share with the listeners? Anything coming up or any other info or places to go?
I again want to just reemphasize that it's so important to shed the need to care what other people think about you. As long as you are approaching your life in a manner that is loving and compassionate and welcoming of perspectives that are contrary to yours, it doesn't matter what other people think, because it's much more important to be authentic and actually represent your own authentic perceptions. Because if not, we're never going to learn from each other. If we're not allowing other people to share their authentic perceptions, and if we're not sharing our authentic perceptions, then we're never going to learn and we're never going to get out of this mess.
I love that. And it's liberating actually realizing when you don't give a fuck what anyone else thinks. So I wholeheartedly recommend it. Yeah, as long as you're coming from a place of goodness inside.
Yes.
I absolutely love it.